It's Life and Taxes on the Talk Station, FM 107.1. Joining us this afternoon, of course, Andrew Foster. Looking forward to today's conversation in light of the fact that, well, we're now into budget season, and I'm sure that, you know, the whole issue of taxes still continue to percolate. And with that, Andrew, good afternoon. Thanks for joining us.
Good afternoon, Lockwood.
So what's the topic for the day?
Well, Lockwood, it's funny that you mentioned budget season, because when you're working on a budget, you have to decide how much income, how much revenue is going to be generated. Mm-hmm. And, you know, one of the things about the definition of gross income under the Internal Revenue Code is Section 61, and it is broadly defined. So gross income definition is, gross income means all income from whatever source derived, including but not limited to, and then it goes on and lists 15 items that are included. Mm-hmm. And one of those items, Lockwood, number 11, is income from the discharge of indebtedness. And that's a mouthful. But the way that you look at this is we call it canceled debt. And canceled debt is income, and it's one of the strangest forms of income, Lockwood, because when the debt is canceled, it's not like someone hands you a check for a certain amount of money that then you use a portion of that money to then go pay your taxes. You know, that's normally what happens. You get a paycheck, and some of that money goes to the government to pay your taxes.
Right.
You sell a piece of property, you get some money, and then you can use that money to pay your taxes.
Right.
What's interesting about canceled debt is you don't get a check because in this regard, someone's saying, you owe me $50,000, but I'm going to not make you pay that $50,000. I'm going to go ahead and just forgive that indebtedness. And when you forgive that indebtedness, the debt goes away. But guess what you have to do on your tax return, Lockwood? You have to put in $50,000 of income. And guess what you did not receive? You did not receive that $50,000 check in the mail. You got that benefit of that money, you know, when the loan was actually made to you, maybe many years ago. So it's one of those situations where a lot of people are surprised. It's kind of one of those things that you get, and the way that you receive it, Lockwood, is on what's called a 1099-C form. And when people get those 1099-Cs, they are very surprised to see that, oh my gosh, I have to put this canceled debt in my income, and I have to pay tax on that, and I didn't get the money for that, you know, right now. I may have gotten the benefit of it later, like earlier, like I said, but it's just one of those kind of funky forms of income. So the good news is in this regard, Lockwood, is the general rule is canceled debt is included in income. But what do we lawyers love? Exceptions.
Right.
And so what I wanted to spend some time today with our listeners is going through some of the exceptions to the general rule, which is, you know, including this canceled indebtedness in your income. And so one of the first exceptions is, let's say you have an interfamily loan. You know, let's say that my father loaned me $20,000 to buy a car.
Right.
Okay. And he says, you know, make your payments, just get to me when you can, you know, that kind of thing. And then he comes to me on my birthday and says, you know what, Andrew, don't worry about paying me that $20,000. You take that car, you keep your $20,000. That's my birthday gift to you.
Man.
Well, guess what, Lockwood? Gifts are not included in income.
Okay.
So therefore, if the original intent was, if this is a loan, and I want you to pay me back, but now I'm going to end up gifting you that, so I'm canceling your debt, but I'm doing it in the form of a gift, then guess what? That is going to be an exception to the general rule that I would have to include that income, that debt, on your tax return as gross income.
Okay.
So that's a good one. Mortgage. So, you know, you take out a mortgage to buy a piece of property, and ultimately it's your principal residence. So you've been living in this property, and unfortunately, you know, you go through some economic hard times and you end up in a foreclosure situation and that property gets foreclosed on. And lo and behold, you've lost your house, and now they've canceled this debt, you know, to the tune of however the amount of the discharge was. There's an exception which says that principal residence indebtedness up to $750,000 can be excluded from income. And kind of the way that I frame this, Lockwood, is you know, we don't want to kick you while you're down.
Right.
You know, you just lost your home. This came about during the financial crisis in 2008, when a lot of people were unfortunately going through foreclosures. And Congress ultimately said, look, you've lost your home. We don't want you to get hit now with a huge tax bill that you don't have the money to pay, because clearly you couldn't pay your mortgage. So you lost your home, and we don't want that to happen. So that is one exception to the rule relative to canceled indebtedness. And the way that you would claim this, Lockwood, is you would still receive that 1099-C from the lender. Okay, so you would get a document in the mail, and it says you've had canceled indebtedness of, let's just say, $500,000, because that's what you borrowed when you purchased your home, and you still have to include that on your tax return, but you do it on what's called IRS Form 982. And Form 982 is where you basically say, nope, I acknowledge that I received this 1099-C, but I'm not including it in gross income because I meet one of these exceptions that we're going through right now.
Okay.
And again, one of these exceptions is principal residence indebtedness. Another one, bankruptcy discharge. So you go through bankruptcy, and ultimately, you know, your debt gets wiped clean, or you come up with a plan to make payments, but you're not paying the debt in full. Then, when you're discharged of your debt in bankruptcy, that is an exception to including your, you know, canceled indebtedness into your gross income on your tax return. One of the big exceptions, Lockwood, is insolvency. So this is an interesting exception, because what you do is you literally list out all of your assets on one ledger, on one side of the ledger, and you list out all of your liabilities, including the liability that was at issue when it was ultimately discharged that resulted in the canceled indebtedness. And you see whether or not your liabilities exceed your assets.
Wow.
And to the extent those liabilities exceed your assets, you're able to not include that canceled indebtedness on your tax return. And a lot of people don't know about this one, because, you know, I think bankruptcy, and I think, you know, losing your home, you know, those are things that, you can maybe intuitively see that Congress may not want you to have to include this canceled indebtedness, because they're offering you relief in other ways.
Right.
But insolvency is an interesting one, because a lot of people do not know about that exception. And don't think about the fact that, hey, maybe I need to list all my assets and list all my liabilities and see if this insolvency exception would be applicable to my situation. Because again, it's not intuitive, and you know, most people, they get that 1099-C in the mail and they're like, oh, I guess I got to include it in my income, and they don't think about, you know, potentially going through the insolvency worksheet and seeing if that exception could be applicable to your situation.
You know, we're talking with Andrew Foster of Harvell and Collins, and of course, we're talking about life and taxes, and right, well, actually, we're talking about an issue of taxes. I do want to remind you, if you need to reach out to Andrew, give him a call, 252 area code 726-9050, that's 726-9050, and you can go online to harvellandcollins.com to get more information both about Andrew Foster and also the law firm. And spell out the word and, please, harvellandcollins.com. Or you can contact Andrew directly at afoster@harvellandcollins.com. All right, you've given us four indications. Are there any others? Because I have an interesting question. Yeah.
Yeah, we got a couple others. So
okay.
Disputed debts, Lockwood. So this is an interesting one. This is one where, you know, we're not quite sure how much that you owe back. So, you know, we deal with this a lot in our practice because, as you can imagine, you know, business loans and other things like that, you know, things can get a little bit murky. And then, you know, there may be a lawsuit at issue. where a settlement is ultimately reached, mm-hmm. and where some of that loan is potentially discharged. But the issue becomes, was that amount in dispute? And so there's a case called Pressler v. Commissioner, and that case basically says that, you know, if there's a subsequent settlement of a disputed debt, then that amount that you're basically that's in dispute is not going to be included as canceled indebtedness as gross income. So, you know, this is very important because when we're working through these issues with clients, Lockwood, you know, we're making sure to look at that settlement agreement, and I've looked at several, to make sure that we're saying, you know, do not issue a 1099-C in this particular situation, because this was a disputed debt, and therefore this exception applies, and you don't even need to get a 1099. You don't even need to issue a 1099-C because of that. Now, if a 1099-C is issued, let's just say you're sitting out there and go, "Oh man, Andrew, I've had this type of situation before, and I did get the 1099-C." Well, again, you've got to take the form, and you've got to say there's an exception to including that amount in income, and it's because that that amount of the debt was actually in dispute, and therefore any amount lessened off of that debt, that one party says it's this and the other party says it's that, that should not be included in income. So, okay. Again, disputed debt,
all right,
are an important one. Another one, Lockwood, student loans.
Excuse me?
This is a big topic.
I think you just said student loans.
Student loans, yeah. So what happens if you're, there's the plan out there right now that President Biden, waved his magic wand and took $10,000 off of every student loan. Now, that's in the court system, as we know.
Right, right.
But what would happen if you're out there and you're a student, and let's say this gets, his executive action gets upheld by the Supreme Court and the $10,000 goes poof off your student loan.
Uh-huh.
The answer is going to be, they passed in the American Rescue Plan that student loan discharge is not going to be taxable as canceled indebtedness. So here you go. There's a big time exception there for canceled indebtedness relative to student loans, and the fact that you would not have to include that in gross income. So again, another exception to the general rule that canceled indebtedness is included in gross income.
Well, two items. Number one, recognizing the fact that if you have a loan that is theoretically cash, and if it's canceled, then you face the possibility of this theoretical cash being granted to your income. Therefore, you have to pay tax on a theoretical or heir. You know, Andrew, before we wrap it up, I when you started the conversation, a scenario jumped to my mind very quickly, and I won't take long, but you have many instances where a parent will lend money to a child, either in the form of actual asset, here I'm going to lend you the property, you go ahead and make, build your business on it, or here's the money and I'm going to, help you out in your endeavors. That, and you touched on that at the very opening. I thought that was pretty important because I know there are a lot of instances where families, the parents, thinking of in a very business-like fashion, they want to help out their children. And then, of course, as they mature and they decide, well, gee, we're just going to forgive you the debt. They've got to keep up with that. That's an important story. So I think that, that issue of converting it's a double-edged sword here. Not only is it a matter of forgiving a loan, but the possibility of creating a gift. In other words, before you just simply say, "Oh well, we're just going to forget about this money that we gave you," you've got to take steps. I see.
Yeah, definitely. And one of the big things I'll tell you, Lockwood, is we always have to be cognizant of the gift tax rules as well.
Right, right.
So
the two
gift tax rules that are at play here are what's called your annual exclusion. So we've talked about this on prior shows, mm-hmm. which is you have the ability to give anyone $17,000 right now,
right.
And you as the giftor do not pay tax on that, and the person that receives it, the giftee, does not pay tax on that amount either, and you don't even need to report this on the tax return. So it's that annual exclusion is very useful for transferring wealth.
Okay.
You know, to the next generation, so to speak. And then we have the lifetime exemption, which, you know, right now Lockwood is in excess of $12 million.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, if you do forgive debt that's in excess of your annual exclusion amount, which is $17,000, you would need to file a federal gift tax return, and then you would need to claim the excess, so whatever's over the $17,000 that you gifted, and put that on a tax return. But the good news is you don't pay tax on it because you've got a $12 million lifetime exemption amount right now. But again, that annual exclusion is very important, because there's a lot of ways where we can typically structure the forgiveness of debt to, you know, basically, look, mm-hmm. Lockwood, this year I'm gonna forgive $17,000.
Right.
And the next
right.
year you have the ability to forgive $17,000 more.
Right.
So
yeah.
So, you know, structuring that forgiveness is another thing that can be done. And, you know, again, it's what we talk about all the time at Harvell and Collins, which is, you know, planning these things. These are always planning opportunities.
Mm-hmm.
And you're right. You have to go through the right process, the right steps, and make sure that you're following all the applicable rules and laws and regulations to put you and your family in the best position possible.
And the way to do that is start with a call to Harvell and Collins, either phone call 252 area code 726-9050, or via the internet at harvellandcollins.com. Spell out the word and, please, harvellandcollins.com. And as always, it's a pleasure to be talking with Andrew Foster, Life and Taxes.